girls.
And welcome, everybody. Tim Emerson of Kuan Yin Healing. And we are back for week 6. Can you believe it?
No.
So, pretty amazing. So, let me hear from you guys first. How are things going? Where are you at? What's your experience so far? Anything at all? Physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, reconnection, put it all together, homework, stuff you heard, stuff you're wondering about.
I'll speak up since I haven't been on here. This is my first time. This is Darlene.
Uh-huh. Hi, Darlene.
Hello.
6 week in and I'm finally able to make a live call.
Awesome.
Yeah. One of the things that I have noticed in the process of doing all of this and just simply being more aware, more conscious of everything around me, I have a fair amount less anxiety in my life right now. And it's the irony is that there is a buttload of stuff going on. And normally I wouldn't be a wreck, but I would feel really, really, really overwhelmed. And finding that I am more able to simply be in the moment. And when things come at me, I acknowledge them, say hello, shake their hand, set them aside, and move forward. And I'm noticing that. I mean, I notice it as soon as it happens, how willingly and graciously, I guess, for that lack of a better word, that things like that are coming to me, but I'm able to just kind of let them go. And that awareness of that, coupled with the feeling of it actually happening, and how good I feel at the end of it, knowing that I didn't hold on to the, you know, stuff, just is awesome. I mean, I love the way it feels. I love that I am aware of it, that I can acknowledge it for what it is. And it makes planning my daughter's graduation party and graduation and college all this much more bearable. So,
yeah. Cool.
I'm glad to be here live. I mean, I've been listening to the recordings religiously and doing my homework and sharing as I'm able. And so it's kind of fun and different and to be actually live with you all. So nice to meet you all.
Yay.
Cool. Well, this is what happens when we're here.
Cool.
Okay, who else? Where else are we at, Howard? We've gone a long ways from where we started to where we are now. Brave souls, this is the time
to speak up. I'll jump in. This is Heather.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Heather.
How are you doing? So I'm having a really interesting experience and lately keeping up because... you know, I don't know if I'm, like, in the rabbit hole or I'm in the matrix or kind of what's going on, but it's just been really interesting. And so much is happening so fast and quick resolution and, you know, just stuff happening. Like, the fire's burning and things are moving really quickly, as are the intensity of the emotions and everything. So, I think we're getting unstuck, you know. So we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. Yep. I guess that's what I'll say.
Yeah, the funny thing about making a lot of changes is that things change.
and you don't even know. Like, it's like, okay, I guess I'm learning how to be in a cycle of just constant change. So that's an interesting thing to learn.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, who else?
And at the same time, it's opening a lot of doors, so that's good.
What kind of doors?
I think that I'm more open to making time for things that matter and communication with what is and what isn't. And I'll share something really exciting of a door opening today. So
okay.
This dawned on me today. I don't know at what time, but sometime today. About 2 years ago, I went to a raw bed and breakfast retreat in Martha's Vineyard. Know a little bit about raw food, never thought, okay, this is like, you know, what it is that I'm going to do. But I went. It was a nice getaway for the weekend. And met this woman, her name's Ava, who owns a company, Uncooking 101. So I go to there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to be studying for my CFP at this raw B&B because I was going to get my certified financial planner. Anyway, that was out the window. I had no time. I was busy doing all this stuff. I come back. About 6 months later, I'm in her raw Uncooking teacher class. Supposed to be doing again CFP, all this financial stuff. It's just a push away. So all this stuff happening over the last year or two. And then today, as I'm talking with her, and my business that's changing is just showing itself to me, you know, lining up with everything, just clients and history and communications and relationships and what the vision is and what's happening next and, you know, being in this isn't the next thing, but this is the process, and just being fully present with that, because that's the reality of what I was missing so much, and now I'm, like, witnessing it, the whole being part of it, everything. So it's
mm-hmm.
really feeling really good. So be connected with all of that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
This is Selena. I can totally relate to what Darlene and Heather have shared. I just feel so much more grounded and just really fully present, and I'm not avoiding or squashing things anymore that I feel like I need to look at later. Like, I'm really just looking at what things are for what they are, and, you know, just being present, and I don't know, and, like, there's just all of these signs around me all the time, and I can really see them for what they are, and I'm finding I'm more at peace, I mean, with who I am, but I'm also more at peace with the people around me and the world around me. I used to get really frustrated in being able to see things that are hidden to a lot of people.
You want to
Why can't they get them? You know, and it doesn't bother me anymore. I totally recognize that everyone's on their own journeys and they're not where I'm at, that's fine, but I can still be where I'm at and still continue my journey without having to, you know, pull myself back and stop from going down my path. And that was just totally empowering to really understand that and see it and feel it every day and not feel guilty about, you know, not doing something because somebody else wants me to do it. But if it's not okay for me, then I just don't do it. You know, so I don't know, everything's just kind of clicking into place and my business is really picking up and there's just stuff just kind of falling at me again, and it's just, it's beautiful, it's wonderful. I'm just so grateful to be on this journey at this time with this group of people. It just fits.
Nice, cool. Several things in there that we're going to touch on today. One of the things that always is fascinating to me about the reconnection is how often I hear people's businesses start falling into place. You know, it's a very interesting aspect. And a couple of the things we're going to touch on today, that is, as we get further along the path, you know, towards the end, compassion kicks in as a natural part of that. But also, you know, about people being in different places. This is more of a, we'll talk about this more in the last week. But as we start taking on bigger things, we find ourselves back a few squares again, only because we're taking on tougher challenges. And that, too, can lend a lot to being patient with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes it's like, well, I'm here and they're back there. And then I realize, No, actually, they're working on something entirely different than you, Tim. And it doesn't really compare well. So a lot of interesting things in there. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Who else?
This is Carol.
Carol.
Yes. I just spent this past weekend in Syracuse for the graduation of my grandson from MPH. And I had not spent as much time in close contact with my two daughters and my grandson in quite a while. And there was quite a bit of drama. Mm. And I was able to step back from the drama before I said anything, which was very fortunate because, you know, you can easily be drawn in. And I was able to calmly discuss what they were trying to get across to each other and kind of diffuse the emotions. And I thought, wow, a year ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So
nice.
This is all so very, very helpful in coping with our day-to-day experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of liken that to standing at a mountaintop and looking down. You see more things, and more things are clear.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Who else? One microphone, no waiting.
Colleen.
Go ahead, Colleen.
Oh, okay, thanks. I'm feeling so very grateful. I had another like very intense, I guess, session with a friend of mine who is a light worker, does healing work, etc. And does extractions, exorcisms, whatever you want to call it. I just it doesn't really matter to me, I guess. I feel more grounded and loving and accepted, and certainly my self-worth is I think it's just all better than I've probably ever felt. I had this session on Thursday, and probably part of the reason that I even signed up for this course was because I saw that she had friended you on Facebook, and I have a lot of respect for her. So it's just kind of like the whole thing, but I have intentionally been seeking. Okay, I didn't want to feel the way I was feeling because I was feeling really, really, really shitty, and increasingly so, I guess. So anyhow, I feel like I'm just now starting the class, except that I haven't been doing much of the homework, but I have been present on the calls, and I am so grateful for what I have shared, and I plan to be as involved as I can be till the end now. So I'm just very, very grateful that, you know, for you, Tim, and all that you've shared, and for everyone who has shared. And I have my computer at home now. I can hook it up and be more involved in comments too on Facebook. So just really grateful to be here now.
That's great. And one thing too, you know, once we're not to jump ahead 2 weeks, but when we do get to the end, one of the things I'm going to recommend is going right back to the beginning and doing another 8 weeks yourself now that you have the overview and digging in.
Ah, yeah, good idea. Good idea. Well, I want to say too, like, I really have appreciated the input, the learning from this, you know, it's contributed as well to my being able to open and trust and do my work with Hanio. So I'm very grateful, for that, because I knew I needed all these different sort of footsteps from different lines of healing to move me forward.
Yeah, great. Yeah. One of the one of the main things that I like about this program is that it takes not one small thing, but a comprehensive overview and putting the pieces together.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree
there. Yeah.
Okay, who else?
This is Monica. I wanted to share that although I haven't been doing the homework as much as I would like, I'm still very excited about just lots of things and things that I think people have already mentioned before. I'm noticing a lot more my reactions to things, and I feel like I'm able to kind of step apart and really consider what do I want my reaction to be, and I think I'm managing better to not have such strong emotions attached to things and really think things through. So that has been really exciting for me.
Nice. And awareness of the small A before we get into awareness of the capital A. And it's not so much the emotional attachments, but rather purposeful emotional things rather than reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And my dictation thing is doing beeping things for some reason. I have no idea why.
Okay.
Wish it would stop. Okay, anyone else?
Hi, this is Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi. I definitely want to just echo what everyone said in terms of this increased awareness, like to the point of it's affecting every aspect, tuning in so much more physically. Last week during the group healing, I had a very, very strong physical sensation of a, like around my heart or heart chakra, of like a shell that was being broken. And it was stayed with me that evening, and then the next morning I felt it again, and then I had this real sense that I had forgiven a situation and a couple of people in particular that had really, really hurt since Christmas. And it was a process that I've been going through since Christmas that was helpful to do the homework around, you know, who's, like what the situation was, what their, when we looked at all those things, like how I contributed, where they were at, and sort of all these little pieces. And I sort of felt like, I shared this image with Heather, like a bird pecking at its shell, you know, it's like peck, 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 and you don't see anything happening for so long. And then the shell starts to really break apart, and then, and it was just such a physical sensation for me. I also have had the experience last week of I've been wanting to really be more physically active, and so I started running, which I found was like has been a really nice combination of my meditation practice while I'm running, and just had a couple of instances where I feel like my prayers were so immediately answered by things that were put in front of me, and I guess the awareness to see those signs. And then emotionally, I had situations where I was really able to stay separate from my emotions and my thoughts and really sort of examine them. I had sort of a funny situation where I, last week as well, where I was thinking to myself, you know, that inner voice, I feel like that inner voice is not that clear for me, and I wish it would be. And then, like, a couple hours later, I was feeling bad about this certain situation, and it was like this thing inside me wasn't just whispering, it was screaming at the top of it, screaming at the top of my inner voice, don't take things personally. This is so clear that it just, I just started laughing about it because it was exactly it, you know, and it was just cracking me up because I had just been doing this, like, oh, I can't hear my inner voice. So, so that was all, you know, so all these different levels of physical, emotional thoughts that's been really helpful. And then also this tool of gratefulness. I've really, at this point, every morning I wake up and almost every morning my first thought is, what am I grateful for? Even in this half-awake state where I start to go through a list and and I might even fall back asleep, but it's been a really wonderful tool. And today I was feeling sort of frustrated about a couple of things, and I was in the car, and I just started saying out loud everything I was grateful for, and definitely shifted the vibration. So that was a real solid tool that even in the midst of feeling a little bit out of balance, it was like right there for me. So that was really wonderful. So thank you for
nice.
That.
You're welcome. There's a couple things in there that we're going to get into. I'll wait till we get into them, though. All right, anyone else?
This is Lori.
Crystal Room. Hi, Lori.
I'm having a little bit of issues with my inner child speaking out when. And it's not me speaking, it's the child and people taking it, you know, like, what the heck was that, you know? And okay, we've got to tame this and this child now again. So. But everything else has been going good. It's like living life a little differently.
Right. It's okay. I have a an inner rebel, you know, with hair even longer than it is now, with electric guitar and 22-year-old attitude. So. All right, anyone else? You sure? Last chance. Jump right in. Now that I'm ready to use it, my dictation software isn't responding. Isn't that fun? All right, well, such is life. Okay. I'm going to refer back to the levels of being that we talked about right at the beginning of the course and clear up a couple of things as we get into this. And, because there's a lot of, we throw around the word spirit in the higher planes and higher self a lot. And I want us to get clear about what it is we mean and what it is we don't mean. When we're talking about those things. And one more try at getting this working. And I guess it's just not going to cooperate. Okay, well, so be it. I'm just going to mute everybody then, and we'll dive right in. Okay. So, you want to refer back to the to the chart we looked at the beginning, and I'll post that in the this week's transcript again. But just a couple of clarifications before we start getting into this. In the bottom plane, the physical plane, when we first start talking about states of matter, like solid and liquid and gases, these are actually, you know, the subsets, the bottom subset of the first part, the physical plane. And then as we get above that, we're not into the physical or even to the astral. We're in what's commonly called the etheric double, this etheric energy around spirit. And so we're still not into spirit, okay? Above that, then we have the astral plane, the emotional aspect. And above that, the mental plane. And again, when I say above that, I don't mean, you know, in a hierarchy. I just mean a faster vibration. But the mental plane is also, like the physical plane, divided up into two subsets, the rupa and the arupa. And the rupa is actually what we think of as the mental body. The causal body, which we think of as a spiritual part, is actually still part of the mental plane. It's still part of our mind. So it's easy to think that we've escaped mind into spirit when we've just simply gone into higher aspects of mind. Okay? And it's this aspect that we praise most, that we prize most, rather, this aspect of intelligence that is active here in the highest part of our mind. When we get into the next plane, the Buddhi plane, this is the middle of this plane is our intuition, okay? But we're still not into spirit. Spirit is actually the bottom of the next plane, the Atma. And it's these three aspects, spirit, intuition, and intelligence together, that are the reincarnating soul, the threefold aspect of humans. And if you look at, some of you were in the teleseminar with me with the Tarot, or if you go back and listen to those, this is a recurring theme in the Tarot, that will or intelligence looks to intuition, okay? And we say, like, trust your intuition. But intuition looks up to spirit, to awareness, okay? And it's this triangle. If we don't have this triangle, we run into a couple of problems, because one of the reasons people have so much trouble trusting their intuition is that it's very easy to mistake intuition for projected fears. And again, you can see this in the Tarot. If you've been in my Tarot lecture, you know, we talked about the major arcana being in three rows of seven with the Fool, kind of separate by itself, and the three separate journeys. And the final spiritual journey starts with the double, right? And we have this triangle, but everything is messed up. It's very easy to start projecting fears and to take that as intuition. And we can't counteract that with will, with intelligence, okay? But we need this higher aspect of spirit. So it's these. We need all three to make things be working well. And this soul, this spirit, this threefold aspect of our inner selves stretches from our mind through the Buddha plane up into the Atma. Now, from there, the very highest, the three highest planes, these are divine planes, and there's a continuum that we are part of. So, you know, in the Adi, the highest plane, you know, this is the logos, this is the divine, this is the pure potentiality. And the second, slower vibration, the Anupadaka, this is the divine spark, okay? That divine essence that is inside you, okay? This is that plane. And then the Atma is when we start to separate out into form. There are a bunch of points that I want to make about this, but one of those points is that when we get up into these higher, these highest vibrations of ourselves, we are no longer separate. There is no separation. That we need to let go of that illusion of self, because it literally doesn't exist. Even though, yes, it's this nice continuum. This is important for several reasons. In the Hindu concept of, I want a better word than creation, existence, manifestation, things that are not, is the Trinity of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And this covers most of Hindu theology. Okay, Brahma is the what we would call the creative force, but it's not really that. It's more of an emanating force. These are not gods. These are energies. Okay. We love to see things created. Vishnu is the sustainer. Okay. The reason Vishnu is one of the, has all sorts of festivals and the very beloved aspect of this Trinity is we love to see things sustained and to thrive and to continue, right? Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu, for example. So we love to have, the law of attraction. We tend to think about, creation. We want to make things happen. We want them to, and once they're created, we want them to thrive, to last, to be sustained, and to go on forever. But the third part of this Trinity is Shiva. And Shiva is the destroyer. And these three aspects are crucial. They're crucial in Hindu thought to the existence of our universe. The universe actually, Hindu thought actually has a cycle. It's 311 trillion years and change of constant creation and destruction and renewal and doing it again. But my point in bringing this up is that we love creating, we love sustaining, we hate generally to destroy, we hate to let things go. We were just talking about what you said exactly about like the shell around my heart is being chipped away. If we want to thrive, if we want to make all these energies work for us, destruction, letting go, is a very important part. And if you look out in nature, there is destruction and decay and regeneration constantly. It is a major part of how the world works. If you remember my analogy of abundance, it's like a stream, okay? Water needs to be constantly flowing in, and water needs to be constantly flowing out, or we very quickly have a problem. And our human tendency is to try to hold on to as much as possible. Once we've dammed up the stream to make a nice little pond, like, but there's water escaping over it. We need to dam that up too, and then pretty soon we've got a flood. Okay, this is the way we think, and it's very useful. To start to think in terms of what do I need to let go of. There are many hints of this in multiple texts. Lao Tzu in the Tao Te Ching says, in the pursuit of knowledge every day is something is gained. In the pursuit of wisdom every day something is dropped. What's outdated? What's the time to let go of? What's no longer serving us? And it's not only that I guess I don't need this anymore, but rather to recognize that this should not be an occasional thing. This should be an ongoing thing. What am I getting rid of? What do I need to let go of? What needs to be destroyed? And if we don't, then we have, the tarot card of the tower, right? We just insist on building instead. We tend to cling out of fear. And fear is the opposite of abundance. It was like, what if there's never water again? We have to jam it up, right? It's like if cats are pretty universal in this, is those of you who have cats, maybe your cats do this too, my cats will come and try to grab my attention and over the crisis that the food dish is only half full, right? meanwhile, there's still plenty of food and there's more food coming. So this tendency to not want to let go, not want to destroy, is totally out of fear, and it blocks manifestation. Okay? It's not even like, yeah, I really should let go. It blocks manifestation. It's entirely a fear-driven, emotionally driven aspect. So one of the keys as we start moving from awareness into making the law of attraction work for us is embrace Shiva. Shiva's there for a reason, and to start to get past that. In Tibetan Buddhism, you know, all Buddhism does this, but especially Tibetan Buddhism stresses impermanence, okay? Embracing death, constant reminder that things are constantly changing, constructing elaborate sand mandalas and then destroying them. This learning to not cling. And again, clinging is a fear that there is not abundance. I have to cling because what if there's never, you know, what if my food dish is only half full? What if there's never food again? Doesn't matter that I'm not hungry right now. We need to learn to embrace Shiva. and I bring this up in context with the Buddhic plane because once we get above the mental plane, let me start again. Fear is very much a mental construct. Okay? Fear is very much a mental construct. It's in our heads. And the thing is, as soon as we get faster than the vibration of our minds, you'll love this. There is no fear. Because fear is a mental construct. Okay? There's no unhappiness. Beyond mind, there is only what is, and that's love. Once we get on beyond the idea that some things are good and some things are bad, okay, some things are holy, some things are evil, this is totally a mental distinction. Once we get beyond that, there is nothing but bliss. And that's why, among other reasons, Joseph Campbell stresses follow your bliss. Bliss is the divine. This is what is. Okay, this is the truth of things. This is our threefold nature. Okay, intuition looks to awareness. Okay, predicted fears, that's back down into living in our minds again. So the main death, the main destruction in the hero's journey, in Don Miguel Ruiz of the Four Agreements, for example, in Tibetan Buddhism, and several so-called primitive cultures, the main death is the death of the ego, the death of the mind. In the Abraham materials, Esther and Jerry Hicks, they talk about living in the vortex. What is the vortex? When you're in the vortex, right, everything is just happening. How do you know you're in the vortex? Because you feel incredible. Because there is no fear, there's just love, okay? There is just going with it. And we have all been there. And the problem is that we don't, it's not hard, per se, to get into the vortex and to use the Abraham terminology. The problem is once we get into the vortex, we start worrying. And then that yanks us right back down to a slower vibration. It yanks us right out of the spiritual realm, right back into the mental realm, because this is the realm of worry. Don Miguel Ruiz talks about breaking old agreements. And this is one of them. It's like, you know, getting past this material. When we do get into this, when we can do this, when we have successfully killed off the ego, killed off the fear, okay, that is self-created, killed off this mental anchor that keeps us from intuition and awareness and connection with divine spark, we can get glimpses of this. And more about this a little bit. Well, when we get glimpses of this, everything stops. I mean, even for a second. It's not something that's reserved for a Buddha sitting under a Bodhi tree. You can get glimpses of this. It has happened to me here and there. And it's just, even if it's just for a fraction, I mean, literally everything stops. There's no sound. There's no nothing, you know? And then everything is back again, like this, you know, like a blaring loudspeaker. You can get glimpses of this. And when you do, speaking from experience here, when that happens, you can think of all the various things an experience like that would do to you when you've never had it before, right? Not like, you know, if it happened now, it's okay, I've been here before. But the first time, you're like, oh my God, what in the world is happening here? I can tell you that the reaction is compassion. The reaction is compassion. And there's no, you know, mental causal link. But the reality in that glimpse, in that awareness plane, is love, is compassion, is connection. You know, you're one plane away from divine spark. In Hindu terms, it's called the monad. You are, it's not a choice to be compassionate. It just is. It's a completely different way of understanding something that we sometimes struggle to do. So I have a couple different ways to look at this today. One is looking at Dhammago, the Wheeze, and the Four Agreements. One is looking at some parts of the hero's journey we haven't looked at yet, well as the Brahma, the Bodhisattva, and the Oversoul. But let me first just stop and see if folks have any questions about this or comments or reflections. So let me unmute you for a minute. Okay. What do you think so far?
Hi, this is Eileen. I from things that I've read, like the ego, it's really the negative ego that's the problem. The ego in and of itself is simply a delivery system for information.
Right.
And so it's a negative ego that we want to conquer or tame, so to speak.
It's why I like. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. That's my understanding of things. Is it the total ego then you're talking about?
Well, yes and no. So I agree with you, but yes, we're also talking about two different things.
Okay.
So when we're down, you know, at the mental Buddhic level here, then yes, we're talking about the difference. That's why I like to talk about fear, you know, as being the problem. Because in and of itself, ego very properly limits us from having to take on the entire universe at once,
right,
which would be way too much. However, we'll talk about this more as we get into the hero's journey. As we continually evolve at a certain point, there is a point where we let go of the ego entirely. Your point is well taken. The ego itself isn't bad. It's the tendency of the ego to try to take control of everything that is problematic.
Right, right. It judges what comes in, and then it's a problem.
Right. This is good. This is bad, and I have to do something because the whole universe is going to fall if I don't.
Right.
And you're just not up to that. Any other thoughts?
This is Darlene. I'm sitting here listening to you talking about the glimpse of the reality and the awareness and the reaction is compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm writing it down too. And I wrote it down and I reread it and I'm listening to you repeat it. And I'm going, oh my God. That's it. That's when
it's like when I'm walking and I am completely aware and present in breath, when my walk truly is my meditation, that's it. I've never been able to articulate it in that way, but when you said that, it's like, yes, that's it. That's it right there, because I've had that moment, or it's several moments actually, that come to me when I'm walking where just there's, I can't even articulate. I mean, what you said is right on with what I feel and what happens in the walk, in that present moment. There's this silence, there's this such peacefulness and that compassion. I mean, I literally feel like when I say, you know, smiling from the inside out, it's that open, loving, compassionate, just kind of embracing everything in everything. I can't even, I'm stumbling over my words here, but it's like, that's it.
Yeah, and there are levels of that, you know, from and echoes of this from plane to plane to plane. And we can quite accurately and appropriately, you know, experience this in pieces as we go through levels and getting refining the experience as we go. It's one of the principal reasons for getting out into nature, where these things work automatically, where there isn't so much mental energy going on, and then we can really start to hear and resonate with what is. Further reflections. Okay, so let me look at this in a couple different ways. One of the problems with discussing the Atma and getting to the awareness plane with a capital A is it is all faster vibrations in our mental energy, so it's a little tricky to try to talk about it. So I'm going to come at this from a couple different angles today, and the idea being that as our mental pictures triangulate, we can get a better sense of where things are. So let me go back to mute for a little bit here. Don Miguel Ruiz in The Four Agreements has a really nice system, a nice way of looking at all of this, pretty understandably. And one of his points is that, this is a direct quote from Ruiz, to be alive is the biggest fear humans have. It's why they resist life. It's early on in his book, The Four Agreements, and that's just a really, really chillingly accurate thought. To be alive is the biggest fear humans have. earlier in my life, and I was a management consultant and fed several other things, and I was always kind of frustrated about the way that things worked and the way that people thought, until I finally came to a lesser realization of what Ruiz has articulated so well. You know, we're not afraid that things are going to go bad. We're afraid that things are going to work out. You know, we're not afraid that we won't get what we want. We're afraid to say what it is. You know, we're afraid to step up and truly live. Richard Bach wrote in Illusions, you know, what if the divine said to you, you know, you want to know the divine's will for you. What if the divine said to you, you wanted to know what its will for you, and the divine simply said, I want to be happy. Do what makes you happy. And when we're paralyzed, we make something that should be easy and joyous very complicated. And we do this because, as Ruiz points out, we have these old agreements that we made when cultural, personal, you know, as children, that just simply don't hold true. And his four agreements are speaking to exactly this issue of the process that we're taking. So this first agreement, and be impeccable with your word. If you look back at what we've done in the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual program, what have we, our parts of this program, what have we done so far? We start beginning honest with ourselves, okay? Looking at what's really going on in our physical world instead of what we tell ourselves. Looking at our emotions and going, what are these emotions telling me about my thoughts? Look at my thoughts. Are these accurate? Are these even mine? Looking at what's going on with us in a spiritual sense. Making those kinds of changes. I want things to change, but I don't want to make any changes. All the things that we've been doing about have been very much around this agreement, being impeccable with your word in the sense of getting honest with ourselves. And it's a surprisingly difficult thing to do at first. And that's because of the second agreement. Don't take anything personally. This agreement, is totally about ego. And this is what we do. Well, the reason I can't, or well, this happened. And as always, we could put at the end of every one of those objections and sentences, to me, right? This is happening to me, that I can't do this because this is a situation for me. Everything is about me. I am the center of the universe. And the problem there is that you're not. it's an inaccurate understanding of what's going on. And it clouds us to getting honest and to moving forward in the sense of living life, because instead we're totally reacting to fears. And we're reacting to fears as an excuse not to have to live our lives. The third agreement, don't make assumptions. This is a totally fear-based agreement, right? It's about projected fears versus true intuition. When we are projecting fears, we are making assumptions. We are saying, yeah, but what if, what if, what if, what if, what if, what if, based on what? Total speculation. Okay? what do we do about this? We do what intuition does in the Tro and other traditions. It looks to awareness. It looks for higher vibration. The idea of going to gratitude, the idea of having a daily spiritual practice. We tend to wait until things are awful, and then people will turn to spiritual solutions. Why is it we don't turn to spiritual solutions as the beginning of the process? Okay. So making assumptions. Anytime we do make assumptions, we're talking about fear here. And number four, the fourth agreement, always do your best. This is really the hero's journey. And the hero's journey is about progress, not perfection. Okay? It's not about getting it right. It's about getting ever closer. It's about the power inherent in taking imperfect action. Okay? When we wait to be perfect, this is fear-based. And it is a recipe for inaction. Taking imperfect action is very much the recipe for moving forward in anything. when the Rees talks about how to break our old agreements, he uses the word responsibility, our ability to respond. Breaking old agreements accepts responsibility, and it gives us the power. Conversely, ego saps our power. Okay? Ego is the illusion of power. And because it's embracing an illusion, it actually erodes the actual power that we have. when the Rees talks about the four masteries, we talked about this in an earlier call, week one or two, I don't remember offhand. The three masteries, awareness, transformation, and intent. Okay? And our... Again, this is the process that we've taken so far. Mastery of awareness, okay? First we have to get honest. We have to open our eyes because awareness includes the possibilities, okay? It includes gratitude. It includes our potential. It includes, don't forget the good about your situation, okay? We project fears. We forget to project possibilities as quickly. and being aware of all that, okay, that this is part of existence. The Upanishads start with, filled with Brahman are all things that are, filled with Brahman are all things that are not. Possibilities, once we get to higher vibrations, are just as real as things that we can hold in our hands. And this is one of the problems that people have with the law of attraction. You know, how can I create this? It already exists at one level. And the second mastery, then, is transformation. And a transformation includes freedom. Freedom from the old agreements. Freedom from old ways of thinking. Freedom from fear. Okay? Not so much, you know, bonk you in the head and magic wand and suddenly you're everything you want. First, get rid of all the stuff that's holding you down. Shiva, right? Destroy. What's it time to get rid of? What needs to be destroyed? What needs to be let go of? And then the third mastery is intent. And this is where the law of attraction can finally kick in. There's lots of material about the law of attraction being about intention and the power of intention. And I agree with it, but most of the time it doesn't work because people aren't ready for it because they have not mastered awareness or transformation. When you do master intention, okay, which this is what Louise said, this is life itself. This is getting clear. What is it you want? What is it you love? You know, what is your intent? And being aware that once we get to these higher planes, again, fear falls away. It simply doesn't exist at these levels. You can't be afraid, you know, in the Atma plane. It just doesn't happen. You can be confused about fear in the Buddha plane, okay? But you're simply bringing in mental energy. This is where Joseph Campbell is coming from in Follow Your Bliss. Because this is what Abraham is talking about, again, into the vortex. Those things that you love, the things that make you happy, those things that make your spirit soar, those things, when you're doing those things, everything is timeless, okay? Everything is just wonderful and perfect. That's what we're talking about. That's the energy of this awareness plane. That's where everything is simply love. Okay? That's what Ruiz is talking about when he talks about moving from the mitote, this personal fog of the dream of the planet, where we're in all the old agreements, to the dream of the second attention, where we shift our attention. We shift our focus, okay, to different things, to higher planes. This is the role of a spiritual warrior, okay, a term that gets thrown a lot around. A spiritual warrior is someone who is in control of one's own behavior, okay? It's not fighting off demons in the astral plane. It's not even necessarily, you know, fighting off self-demons. It's mastery of self. It's mastery of self. The enemy is the old self. Okay? One of the hardest things for us to see, because the emotional plane is so difficult, the smoky mirror, the enemy, these inner demons don't actually exist. We made them up. But as long as we believe in them, they're still there. So the spiritual warrior understands that the enemy is the old self. Okay, so we started off saying stepping into being, stepping into a new way of being, says, I no longer willing to accept the old self. This is the enemy. And there is no other except the new self. And this is where the hero's journey comes in. Louise also talks about embracing of death. Again, embracing of ego. The terms like initiation, okay? Initiation is an initiation into the higher planes, but how do we get to the higher planes? How we get into these states? By through Shiva, by killing off of the earlier ones, of the older ones, of the outdated ones. Apotheosis, it talked about as, you know, meeting with the goddess and Atoma, the father, coming together, but recognizing that these trials and these blessings are one and the same and for the same purpose, to help us get ready. And apotheosis is actually literal term is to raise you to the level of a god. You know, it's literally raising your vibration up to a completely different plane. And this is the meaning of heaven on earth. You simply start to choose differently and to see that we can choose differently and to see love and to realize that this is reality. The real reality. And this is probably another good place to come up and pause and see what you think. Any thoughts there? And the four agreements and breaking free and taking on new agreements. What do you think? Lay it on me.
It makes sense to me. Having read the Four Agreements a few years ago, for me it's just really great to be able to come back to them now, because I'm in a place where I feel like I can actually really work with them, I guess, and really put them into practice. Even though it's still very difficult, but I know there's been times when they really, I could see myself like kind of flowing with them, and my life was just, or those moments at least, were just so much easier, no matter, and so much more beautiful, no matter what the situation I was in. So I get it. And I'm excited to be able to actually work with it and apply it and integrate it into my life, even like for real, I guess, and to have it stick there.
You know, our old self is really an addiction.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, and we cling to addictions because addictions work, or at least they seem to for us.
Yeah.
You know, they appear to feed a need. They actually don't, but they appear to. And, you know, one of the things that we say to people new to recovery from alcohol, for example, is, you know, they've got all kinds of excuses why they can't do this. And one of the questions is, you know, how long do you want to suffer? You know, And that's the same question here with the old agreements. Well, you know, that to the extent that we want to cling, it's like, how long do you want to be in your own way? How long do you not want to be what you really want to be?
Yeah.
And the reason that we don't, the reason we nailed it, to be alive is our greatest fear.
Yeah, that one's really hit home for me recently, like in the last couple of months, and it's becoming easier and easier. Like, I've let other people's excuses become my own excuses, and I'm not putting up with that anymore. I'm just like, no, this is what I need to do. And, you know, just learning how to break those agreements, and even just to see it objectively from a kind of an outside-looking-in perspective, it's very exciting and empowering to be able to let those things go.
Yeah. And to see fear in its proper place. Among the many wise things that Ryan Eliason has said to me, one of my favorites is, if you're not afraid, I'm not saying this right. If your dream doesn't scare you a little, it's not big enough.
Yeah.
You're not being honest with yourself yet. And I found that to be a really interesting measuring stick, but it's also useful once I get into things and like, geez, you know, this is kind of scary. And I remind myself, of course it's scary. You're doing something worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I totally believe that, and I've lived on and off throughout my life that way, and it was, I don't know when it shifted exactly, but, like, I did Ryan's program, too, so, you know, it started out really great, and I was, like, really embracing all these things, and then I fell into this place where I needed to really go through this healing process before I could really face those scary things. You know,
yeah.
And now it's kind of clicking again with, like, this whole reconnection and this journey that you've been taking us on. I'm still scared of things, but I feel like I have the right things in place now to be able to just go back to facing those scary things. It's so hard to put it completely into words. It's just a complete 180 about how I was living in terms of those scary things. I don't know. I'm sorry. I feel bumbly now because I totally can't put into words I'm trying to say.
Well, another thing coming from my intuition here is that as a, you know, having worked as a professional musician for years, you know, we talk all the time about the pressure of that, the, you know, the stage fright and the, you know, the fear of getting up, and you know, you get good at things and you have confidence and things work out well, but there's only one way to walk out onto stage and have no fear, and that is to not give a shit. And so, you know, if there's any part of you that cares, there's going to be a little nervousness. And, you know, the only way to get rid of it is like, why am I even here? Let's get this stupid thing over with and go on. You know? And so if you're doing anything that's important to you, it's quite appropriate that there's going to be some nervousness. You're doing things you've never done before. So versus fear is a reason to shut down. So I've come to what my point is that I've come to recognize is that kind of fear is a reason to push through, is a sign that, nope, everything's exactly the way it should be. What's another example? You know, you're in a coffee shop one day and you meet this person, you know, and it's love at first sight who's going to be the love of your life. It's like, you're both nervous as hell. And if you weren't nervous as hell, then it's not going to be much of a relationship because you don't really care. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right? The butterflies are an important part of that process. You know, I don't think anybody meets anything, you know, meeting the love of your life, something that you care about. I don't think anybody does that in complete calmness and objectivity. At least not in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't speak well for passion. Okay, any other thoughts on Louise? All right, then. Put you back on mute. And we've got a couple things to cover yet about the hero's journey, and one of them we'll look at today and the other in a couple of weeks. And in no real order here, it's, again, once we get up to this level, it's hard to put words to things. But at this level, Joseph Campbell's work really strongly echoes a lot of what we've been talking about here. And in addition to that, bringing in a new idea. And these two ideas, one we're going to talk about today and one we're going to talk about in a couple weeks, are my two favorite parts of the comprehensiveness of this program. So let me get into a couple of these here. So in the hero's journey, just to recap really quickly, you know, we've, you know, you have this continual process of going down the road of trials, and you do this with the help of, you know, of others and with the goddess, and you know, the, so we do have blessings and to help us. We do have, but also the trials and the others, the Father are not there to, you know, to keep us down, but rather to make sure that we have the capacity, the ability to move forward properly. So the trials are actually important learning things. And this is a continual process. As soon as we achieve one thing that we wanted, we have new desires. This is really what karma is, the continual promise of fulfilling your desires. And as you want new desires, before you can have those desires, you have to go through a new row of trials. Why? Because you have to step into a new level of being. And to step into a new level of being, you have to raise the vibration and learn these new things. And why do you have to do that? Well, if it were in your current level of being, you would already have it, and it wouldn't be something you're desiring. This is simply the process. Okay, over and over and over again. But there's a little bit more to this. And I'm trying to decide which order to talk about this in. So let me talk about two parts of this work. First, the idea of the bodhisattva. And a bodhisattva is someone who has achieved this level of awareness, mastered this level of awareness, is in nirvana, but chooses not to continue. Now here I'm not going to get into all the very, very many, many esoteric things. There's like, you know, there are six different choices such a being can make and so forth. I'm not going to get any of those. I'm going to keep things simple. And the first two are Buddha and Kuan Yin. And this is exactly what happened. In Buddha's case, the story goes that Buddha, when he achieved enlightenment, sat under the Bodhi tree for 40 days. And 40 days in ancient writings means not literally 40, but a very long time. Okay. You know, in the Bible, when it rains for 40 days and 40 nights, it doesn't mean literally 40. It means for an extremely long time. It's just a convention there. And when Buddha attained enlightenment, and by overcoming his ego, he was just filled with bliss, because that's what all there is at this level. Ruiz talks about this too, right? Love coming from the trees, love coming from the sky, and you know, not surprisingly, he just wanted to hang out there. And the story goes in the ancient scriptures that Brahma himself went to Buddha and pleaded with him to return. And of course, Buddha set out on the quest of enlightenment, not for himself, but to free people from the wheel of karma, as he saw it. So Buddha decides to come back and teach. The second bodhisattva is the way that we usually think of a bodhisattva, and that is Kuan Yin. And Kuan Yin achieved enlightenment, reached nirvana, and rather than stepping into this endless state of bliss, the story goes, looked back and saw all the rest of the world and realize something extremely important, which is that enlightenment for oneself is meaningless unless all other beings are enlightened as well. As part of what, overlapping what I said earlier, when you have just this tiniest glimpse of this awareness, there you are simply filled with compassion. It's almost an automatic thing. Now, this is also, so we can look at some of these descriptions as Campbell has described it. I'm trying to go through this while my cat is blocking the light. There we go. This is not, you know, simply a goddess energy. Kuan Yin actually goes back to a Hindu concept. And I always have to say this slowly, but Avalokiteshvara, who was actually a man, later translated differently, becomes Kuan Yin in Chinese. But it doesn't matter, because at this point, this is asexual. There is no male and female. There is no separation of opposites here. The name, in each case, of Kuan Yin, it means the jewel and the lotus. Okay, the Lord who has seen within. And as Campbell describes this, when the envelope of consciousness has been annihilated, then he becomes free of all fear, beyond the reach of change. And anyone can attain this, you know, through herohood. This is the process. This is Buddha himself said this. This is an enlightenment is it's crossing to the other side of the river. That there was no more complicated than that. It's an awakening. This is why we can get glimpses of this. The typical mantra you hear, you know, Om Mani Padme, you know, jewel in the lotus. And what Kuan Yin is referring to here is kind of holding the world in the hand in a compassionate way. Or, you know, a very esoteric way of saying, I got your back. Everybody can relax. But I want to stress here about this then, when the envelope of consciousness has been annihilated, then he becomes free of all fear, okay? Because fear comes from this mental consciousness. Time and eternity are one. Time and eternity are one. And that was my experience, as brief as my microsecond glimpses of this were. I mean, literally everything stopped. It wasn't that there was relative silence. I mean, there was no sound. There was no nothing. It's like, and it jarred me. And I have heard other people explain this the same way. And everything is just timeless. When we're following our bliss, you know, when we're with that perfect person, when we're doing this, something we really love, you know, time just stands still, right? Or goes very fast, or both. Time and eternity are two aspects of the same experience. Time is simply a function of consciousness. The fall from perfection that, for example, you know, the story of Adam and Eve, the story of man, is a fall into duality of going from eternity into time. And this process then of going through the hero's journey. You know, we talked about earlier, you know, father is the other and father is the enemy. And this is the point in the end. Self is killed, father is killed, everything is killed, everything is killed. Shiva reigns here. And beyond that is eternity. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna something else. Arjuna is really hesitant to fight. He has the relatives on the other side. And Krishna points out it just simply doesn't matter, that it's all illusions. It's all faceless consciousness, that everything is only eternity. And this is the part in apotheosis where we recognize that all the things that happen are simply good, bad, tragic, wonderful, horrible, are simply aspects of the majesty of being. And it takes quite a bit of awakening, perhaps, to be at that point where we start to see that. If you remember, I compared this to nature, right? Nature is wonderful, nature is cruel, and we don't judge nature as good and bad. We recognize that as just the majesty of nature. And when we start to see the majesty of being in this way, things aren't good or bad. This is duality. Things just are. And not in a detached, I don't care way, which would throw out, you know, the good fear with the bad fear, but rather in this all-embracing, oh my God, all is bliss. And there's a band from the 70s, East Meets West band called Shakti, John McLaughlin, amazing jazz musician, and some Indian musicians. And they have this beautiful song, and then the title of the song is, what need have I for this? What need have I for that? I am dancing at the feet of my Lord. All this bliss, all this bliss. Which has got to be the best song title ever. But that's kind of what they're talking about here. So the bodhisattva then has reached this state. And the bodhisattva is then desireless. The bodhisattva is wise. The bodhisattva is compassionate. The bodhisattva sees himself or herself in all beings and sees all beings in himself and herself in a very literal sense. Time and eternity are the same thing. And so for Kuan Yin, this is really a literal thing, that the whole world is Kuan Yin, and that caring for the world at that deep level. Now, the other part of Campbell I want to talk about today is the idea of the ultimate boon. The purpose of in sense of a journey of initiation, is once you've achieved this level and this understanding and this compassion, and then, like Buddha, like Kuan Yin, the idea is that you come back. And so in the hero's journey, whatever the hero, you know, learns, the hero comes back to share with the village, that this is a very important aspect. This is not a journey for oneself. This is a journey that benefits everyone. So, you know, the hero's quest is accomplished penetrating right to the source. And from this point, then, maybe not being as wonderful as Kuan Yin or the Buddha, very often the hero refuses to come back. Just as originally, you know, the hero refused the call to adventure, now that everything is wonderful, the hero doesn't want to go back. I've gotten used to life in this new world. I've learned the new world. It's you know, it's great. I want to stay right here. And so a couple of interesting things can happen in this regard in our myths and our stories. One way is a rescue from without. By the way, there's a wonderful children's book that nicely covers this, called The Neverending Story. If you can find it, you want to find it in the original hardcover, which is in red and green ink. And the hero of The Neverending Story is a boy. He's reading this story about this magical boy in another land, but the stories start to commingle. You know, it's like the world starts to intertwine. And then they intertwine more, and then the boy finds himself in the magical world. Very hero's journey has to go through all these things. And towards the end of the story, he has become this magical boy that he was first reading about. And as a magical boy, and he sees himself as that person in that world. And now, when you flip the book over, it's the same story told differently, but now he is that magical boy, and he starts getting glimpses of this kid in his bedroom, and slowly gets twirled into that world. And this is very much the story of the return. So the return comes in a couple of ways. One way that it can happen is that if the hero in his quest has not really done all the steps, so to speak, you know, something was stolen from the gods, so to speak, the elixir, Campbell calls it, you know, Prometheus stealing fire from the gods, you know, this kind of thing. And in this case, getting back with his life can be kind of tricky. But the point here, what I want to share about this is Campbell calls this the magical flight. If he's managed to steal the elixir without properly going through the trials, then the trials he faces on the way home are simply the trials he skipped on the way up. You know, so there's no shortcut here. One other way, you come at learning the wisdom that you did. Maybe the best story of the magical flight ever is Odysseus coming back from the Trojan War, right? The Odyssey. He managed to piss off the gods royally, and he has a 20-year journey back to Ithaca. The other way is that the reluctant hero is rescued from without, okay, with or without his consent. So there's either a magical flight or a rescue from without. And brought back from a supernatural adventure in that car. In which case, you know, the people who will benefit from the elixir, they are facing their own road of trials. So we can try to twist this around in many, many different ways, but one way or the other, we have to go through the process of initiation because that's the process that makes us ready to be able to handle these things. Remember the example of being ready to handle the chariot of the sun god, you know, rather than simply trying to take it on ourselves before we're not ready and scorching up the earth. The difficulty here is that when we're rescued from without, one way or the other, brought back from the supernatural adventure, the ego is restored. Okay? Whether we're rescued from without or driven from within, or gently carried by guiding divinities, we have to re-enter this world where we came. This long-forgotten atmosphere, as Campbell says, where men who are fractions imagine themselves complete. And he has yet to confront society with his ego-shattering, life-redeeming elixir and take the return blow of reasonable queries, maybe some resentment of good people, at a loss to understand. The point here is being able to assimilate self back into the others. This is the role of the Bodhisattva. There's an old saying that it's easy to be a holy man in a mountain. Separating ourselves can be healing, retreats can be important, but walling ourselves off from everyone else is not understanding. We're not there yet. That's still us and the other, and it will keep us in the road of trials. Okay? As long as there is the other in opposition to us, we will have trials. And these dragons, these demons, are the watchdogs of the gods. To get to that level, we have to assimilate the other. Okay? We have to be able to transcend that. We have to get past this conception of good and evil. And how do we do this? Well, we do a lot of what we did at first, which is we're grateful for what we have. We look for allies.
We let go of judgment. And we stop trying to do everything by ourselves. And that's the last part I wanted to talk about here, the idea of the Oversoul. You know, we talk about connecting with our highest selves, and then from there, connecting with the Oversoul. And here's the deal breaker. If we haven't got this, okay, this is the Shiva will smash this to hell, because there, as in the Oversoul, is not the higher self of a person. The Oversoul is a higher self of, depending on who you read, of a group in the Seth trilogy, which is, you know, fictionalized. It's a group. So an Oversoul might have, you know, 7 or 70 or 700 lives. Just like you would might put different, you know, socks and gloves on your hands and feet, it puts different different incarnations on. And so as you get up to the higher selves, you aren't a separate ego anymore. You are part of a group. So if you want to know your higher self, if you want to connect to your higher self, you cannot do it by yourself. That has no meaning. As soon as you truly get to your higher self, you are not an individual. You are part of everything. Okay? And you are connected to everything. And this is why when you get to this level of awareness, even if it's the smallest glimpse, you have to have compassion. You have no choice. It's not like someone is forcing to you. There would be no other reaction. There is no other reaction to have other than that. So, that is my best articulation of the awareness plane. And I'll talk about reactions in a minute and a little bit of homework. But the next week we'll talk about putting it all together. How do we live on all levels like this? And then on week 8, we'll talk about the return, mastery of two worlds, once we've managed to learn how to do this. So, go back to the muting thingy. All right, there you have it, my understanding of the awareness plane. What do you think? One at a time.
I think it's right on. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I want to do with our healing exercise today, and which is going to segue into the homework. So for the healing exercise today, I want you to try this. Just simply let everything be. When we're going through energy work, we can, you know, we can see various sights, we hear various sounds sometimes, or even music. But these aren't the important things. It's nice, but just notice them without any kind of attachment. Just let things be. You know, the yogis will argue against being attached to the siddhas, which are manifestations of people who are highly practicing yoga, because those are the sideshows and not the main point. And just following those things into silence. Eckhart Tolle has this wonderful way of doing things. You know, you imagine just like that gentle little, you know, Tibetan bell sound, and as the bell starts to fade away, and it slowly fades into silence, keep following it into the silence and beyond. And just listen and go. And just really just let things be. And kind of no judgment. Just noticing. And homework for next week. Okay? I'm going to go full circle with where we start. What I would like to know for the homework is, what are your new agreements with yourself? We start off, what do you want and why? You know, what do you love and why? We've gone through examinations of physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual aspects and now awareness. And now that you've got all that, what are your new agreements with yourself? This will be a work in progress, but let's articulate it, you know. You can't be a spiritual warrior, going from old self to new self if we don't know what the new self is. All right, fair enough. Mm-hmm. That's your cue for a rousing chorus of, yes, absolutely.
Yay!
Can I start on it now? And the way to do this is, let's use this exercise right from here, okay? Start making going to the awareness plane, going to the divine, going to spiritual help, however this is, you see this, start making that your first step and not your last stop. Okay? And so let's start here. Let's go into this exercise with being open to the higher self, to your oversoul, to that compassionate awareness plane, to that highest part of ourselves where we're simply a part, okay, like a clothing put on in this. And let's, right from there, what are our agreements? Okay? How should we best live this? Are we going to bring it back into the ego level? That's life. But let's do that really informed and living on all levels. And that's all I have to say about that. So, may have any questions, comments, reactions? Anybody glad that's the highest plane?
I just, you talking through this whole thing, like my vibration has shifted so much higher just during this call. It's phenomenal.
Excellent. Excellent.
Thank you.
And of course, you're welcome. And this, of course, is the plan through these 6 weeks to raise our vibrations. And then bring it into homeostasis and back into our world. So, yay.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts, questions, comments, revelations? Now you know why it's called Kuan Yin healing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, if everybody's good, then I look forward to reading your new agreements, and we'll step into a group healing session. And have a wonderful, wonderful week.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks, Clem. You too.
Thank you, Tim.